National Broadcasting Company presents Analog. Our guests today are Sam Massell, Mayor of Atlanta, Georgia, and Maynard Jackson, Vice Mayor.
As Mayor of Atlanta, I guess I should start our discussion. And Maynard, I think the audience might be interested, first of all, to understand that here in our elections, we don't actually run on a ticket as such. So although you and I have been friends and, had some acquaintance over the last few years and worked together some in this election, actually we didn't run as a ticket, and others don't either, the Board of Aldermen or the Board of Education locally. Everybody runs independently in what we have called a nonpartisan election, where a candidate must receive a majority vote in order to receive the office itself. So we're getting to know each other a little bit more than companions might on a ticket, and this might explain to the listening audience occasionally tonight if we ask each other questions that otherwise we might have known. I thought we might start, it was suggested rather, that we reminisce and go back to the beginning of our own interests, and I would start with mine, I think, from junior high school. Not that I had decided at that time I would run for mayor of Atlanta, but prior to that year, I was what was considered an introvert, actually. And a friend of mine was running for student body president and asked me to paint his campaign signs for him. And this, of course, is something an introvert can do. You can paint signs at home. So I did, and he got elected, after which he named me student body treasurer, which I did not want to accept, but did after he insisted. So I found I liked it. I enjoyed it. And I got involved from that day forward in one extracurricular activity after another. This was in my senior year then of high school, followed by the college years, where I became extremely involved in campus affairs, from which I went to the community at large, and following the same pattern, participated in one civic and service activity after another. And I enjoyed this type of involvement so much that it didn't have to be in the same pattern. I found it just as easy to be president of the Atlanta Humane Society, for instance, as I did to be president of the Muscular Dystrophy Association, or to work even in a veterans organization or in some religious group. And I worked in many of them and served on the boards of quite a number, and really was what many people would call a joiner, but I was an active participant in quite a number of these groups. And I've always contended there was just a very fine line between civic and service life and public life or politics. One of the differences, of course, is that you get paid to be in politics and you don't get paid in civic life. Another difference is that they usually ask you to serve in the civic capacity, where you ask the people to let you serve in a political position. I ran for my first office, well, let's see, it was 18 years ago when I offered for the city council of a little town called Mountain Park, which is an interesting study itself. It's an incorporated city just like Atlanta. It's in the same county here of Fulton, and like Atlanta, is in two counties. Atlanta's in Fulton and DeKalb, as everybody around here knows. Mountain Park is in Fulton and Cherokee County. One of the interesting points is that it's the only city in the United States, reportedly, where you can vote and hold office and not have your legal residence there. Anybody that owns property, because it's a resort town, there are very few people who actually live there all year round, so Anybody who owns property can vote and hold office. And I had purchased a little cottage there and was single at the time. And incidentally, it'll be interesting maybe to this listening audience to note that this was one of the times I ran in point blank to some prejudice, because a group of the, I guess you'd call them political bosses, asked me to run for the city council, which I agreed to do, and I took my girlfriend, she's now my wife, I took my girlfriend with me to the clerk's office. I decided if I was going to run, I was going to make a race of it, and I went to the clerk's office to copy down the list of registered voters to which I was going to send a letter, and the clerk told me, at the time, said, "Sam, you don't have a chance." And I said, "Why?" She said, "They found out you're Jewish." Well, my first reaction was, "What do you mean they found out?" I mean, you know, I thought people knew I was Jewish. But my second reaction, of course, was one of concern and alarm and, I guess, some anger and some disappointment. But the same people who had asked me to run now were opposed to my running. And I went to them and asked them, so I know it to be, I know it firsthand, because they admitted that they were now opposed to my candidacy. Well, to make a long story short, actually, the way they elect there is they take the first five, and these are elected to the council. There were eight of us running. I came in sixth. Now, remember, I was only about 24 years old. I'd only owned my cottage there for about 6 months, so this was quite a moral victory. It happened that a few months later, one of the councilmen sold his property and moved away, and the other four elected me to fill his vacancy. So I served 2 years on the city council, almost 2 years, of Mountain Park, Georgia, from which I went to the City Executive Committee of Atlanta, which is a very minor office, but one I held for 8 years, and it is elected but by the ward basis. From there, I ran for the office of vice mayor, which you will take beginning January the 5th and hold for the next 4 years. I was reelected 4 years later to that office. Actually, I'm sure after you did your homework, you discovered this. Now, the office wasn't even known as vice mayor when I first ran for it 8 years ago. It was known as president of the Board of Aldermen. And one of the news reporters found this title to be cumbersome, and he started shortening it to the term of vice mayor, and then I went to the legislature and had them change it officially. But
I think the city charter now bears both names.
Yes, it carries both, and so you get a lot of room on the ballot now. You have both titles on there. But I served there for 8 years, and then, as history has recorded it, ran for the office of mayor when our present mayor, Ivan Allen, outgoing holder of this office, announced that he would not seek re-election. Let me ask you to bring yourself up to that point, and then let's talk a bit about the uniqueness of this election being one that lasted for almost a year.
Well, Sammy, I think that our lives have probably had similarities, and I'm sure in many ways have been quite dissimilar. Of course, I'm 31 years of age, and I was born in Dallas, Texas, where my father was a Baptist minister. My mother taught foreign languages and music. And I'm one of six children. And, of course, I moved back to Atlanta, my mother's home, in 1945 when I was seven. And attended the public schools of Atlanta and went into Morehouse. After I completed the 10th grade, I went into Morehouse on an early admissions Ford Foundation scholarship. And while in high school at David E. Howard High School, I participated in debating and things like that. I guess maybe unlike your early years, I was not an introvert. I was kind of the happy fat guy around high school. And one of the favorite jokes was, watch out, here comes the crowd. But Morehouse, I think, had a profound effect on my life. I had a lot of my ideas, a lot of my characteristics, I think, personality characteristics, shaped by the college. It was kind of a tradition in my family for the men to go there. My father had gone in his brother and people before them. And I finished Morehouse and was still very young and decided to work for a while and to grow up some. And finally finished law school in 64, and while there I was active with the Student Bar Association. And as I think back on it now, I guess the very first race I ever ran was in law school, when I ran for president of the Student Bar Association and luckily won that office. Then, of course, I came back to Atlanta and just worked for the National Labor Relations Board, a federal regulatory agency, for 3 years as an attorney covering Georgia, Alabama, and eastern Tennessee. The interesting thing, by the way, was that I was the first black attorney hired by the NLRB in the South. And I happen to know from various persons that there had been some real deep conversation about whether I should or should not come into the region. But I had, without knowing of this dialogue going on within the agency, indicated to them through my application that I did not want to have a choice of three locations, you know, where I could work, but that if I could not be placed in Atlanta, I just didn't want to be hired by the agency. And that came through. Then, of course, I left there because after 3 years, I felt a need for more direct involvement as a lawyer and as a black man and the problems that I feel are still, of course, threatening to almost consume us. And so I went in with a program that was brand new then with Emory University here. It was a federally funded program called the Emory Community Legal Services Center. It provides free legal services to low-income people. And worked with them until I really took a leap. The wisdom of which, by the way, my wife still debates because of the lingering debts we still have. In June of 1968, when on the last day of qualifying for the Democratic primary, I popped up and borrowed $3,000 and ran against Herman Talmadge for the U.S. Senate. Now, there's no question in my mind that that race was what laid the foundation for my being able, I think, to run this year and to succeed as was the case. Now, that election, of course, is something I think we could spend an awfully long time talking about, because the anecdotes and the stories that came out of that are enough to fill a book, and someday I hope they might. But suffice it to say, I felt that it was a worthwhile endeavor. As you know, I lost in the state. I got 207,171 votes counted. Now, we still don't know how many votes I actually got, but we believe it was at least 65,000 votes more than that. Of course, the FBI has the whole thing documented, and we have not heard another word from them about it. But I did carry Atlanta against Talmadge. And that was something which surprised many, many people, including myself, and which I think provided encouragement to run this year for office. And as you know, I went through some soul-searching as to the office for which I would run this year. People were urging me to run for everything from mayor to vice mayor to alderman. And I had really, at one time, determined I would not run for office. I wanted to concentrate on developing a law practice after leaving the Emory program, to which I returned immediately after the senatorial race. But I ultimately decided to run for vice mayor, a position which I felt I could win. So I announced on March the 7th for vice mayor, and resigned my job on August the 1st and began to run full-time, and ended up with the usual thing. Well, in this case, we did win. I got, I guess, around 50 to 59% of the vote, and a sizable deficit. So that, I think, brings us pretty much up to date.
Yes. You had commented about your age, and I'd left mine out. Although I'm a bit older than you, I'm considered right young, and I think it's a tremendous advantage that we both have. Because I think we can relate to the youth of Atlanta, and this is so all important here as it is all over the country, because they're saying something. They have something to say, and they're saying it. Actually, I'm the youngest mayor that's ever been elected in Atlanta, and the first Jewish mayor. And I received the largest vote that any mayor's ever received in Atlanta. So I go in very comfortably feeling that I have a mandate, you know, that that as unique as these situations were, that the philosophy I follow is that of the majority of the citizens of Atlanta. I have no reason to believe that the citizenry at large should feel any different than the electorate. And we got the majority vote. You got a very beautiful vote. So we are free to speak our piece because we're speaking what we have to believe is the mm-hmm. feeling of all Atlantans, of the vast majority of them. This election was very unique in having lasted as long as it did. There were some people, particularly in the news media, who found fault with it from time to time and defined it or described it as Dullsville at one point, in fact. But what they had overlooked was the uniqueness in the incumbent mayor announcing in January that he would not seek re-election in October. And this had never been done before, where immediately you had the newsmen, well-meaning as they were, but from all the media, sticking mics or pads and pencils in front of you, wanting a comment or a position or an announcement, for that matter. And I refused and held out for as many months as I could from even announcing, because I knew that with the history of 2 and 3 month campaigns in Atlanta, the longest mayoralty campaign, to my knowledge, having been 3 months, that the electorate would get tired of all the candidates and maybe go fishing on election day if the campaign had actually lasted a full 10 months.
Well, you know, I'm not really sure that I had the same problem you had, because I announced on March the 7th, as I mentioned before. But in fact, I went without any announced opposition until one candidate who had been mentioned prominently as a potential candidate for mayor announced he would not run for mayor, would not run for the Board of Aldermen, but in fact would stay active in politics. And within a week thereafter, as I recall, it was back in, when was qualifying period, in September or August?
Yeah.
Late August, I believe it was, announced that he would run for vice mayor.
I think everybody admits immediately that the election of, in both cases, in my race and yours, is, carries with it a great deal of significance. And I think we ought to point out to the listening audience that where some people question, you know, will a black man vote a straight black ticket, so to speak? Will a black man vote for a white man? Will a white man vote for a black person? Even without using figures, if you just point out that I did have a black opponent, among others, but one who had had and does hold elected office on the as a member of the Board of Education, and holds a high position in the field of education, and you did, in fact, have a white opponent, one who, as you have mentioned, was a member of the Board of Aldermen and a long-time member, should spell it out for everyone that, it's my opinion anyway, I don't even know that you concur, but I, because we haven't discussed this specifically, but it's my opinion that each voter made his own judgment as he entered that booth on the qualifications of the candidates he had to choose from. And he picked the best man in each race, in the mayor's race, the vice mayor's race, and Board of Aldermen, Board of Education, and he didn't let color dictate or race, didn't let religion dictate. He didn't even let philosophy dictate, because on the one hand, where I'm known and admitted to be a very liberal person, I know I picked up a sizable conservative vote. So these people then had to make their judgment on something else, whether it was an appreciation for integrity, whether it was because they felt I had more experience having been vice mayor, you know, to be mayor than my opponent did. I'm not certain, but there were any number of factors which they could consider. And I think they put all these in their own little computer, each person does, as he goes into the voting booth. And I don't think it necessarily follows that all people, or even the majority of any one group, is going to vote for a person from that group. And you and I proved it.
I would agree. It's very interesting in the vote that I received. And by the way, I would certainly agree with what you said earlier, Sam, about the mandate. I think probably this administration, in terms of the mayor and vice mayor, this administration has received maybe the biggest and the broadest based mandate of any administration in the history of the city. Now, by broadest based, I mean specifically white voters and black voters. And then when you break down the races, black and white, you see young and old. In the whites, you see, for example, low-income whites. You see very conservative precincts giving us support, for example.
Organized labor endorsed me, and it's the first time they've ever picked a winner in the mayor's race.
Right. Of course, they endorsed me this time, so they had a real good run this time. The other thing was, for example, in Lester Maddox's own neighborhood where he grew up, which is around, where he held his had his business, I think that I got somewhere around 18% of that low-income, generally conservative white vote. Now, I don't believe, by the way, that it's a mistake. I believe it is because, as you have said, people make their decisions when they go into the voting booth. I think it's also something else, Sam. I think that more and more people are realizing that there are issues common to blacks and whites which transcend the consideration of race. And specifically, for example, the question of economics. I think that when a poor white person sends his kids out to an inferior school and they're raggedy and their breakfast or their lunch is comprised of a bag of potato chips and a Coca-Cola, then no longer are they going to say to themselves, it's okay because I'm white. So I think they realize the commonality of issues. And I think more and more we're seeing people voting in a manner consistent with their self-interests. And I think that's very important. And also, in further support of what you've said, I look at the vote that I got. As you may recall, the night, of course, I know you were busy watching your own votes, but to kind of jog your memory, I was behind about 4,000 votes in the early part of the evening. And then I fell behind about 8,000 votes. That's when I began to become a bit concerned until my statistician showed me that these were almost totally white precincts reporting. And I ultimately received right at one-third of the white vote in addition to about 97% of the black vote. So I think that the mandate, the collective mandate we've received is really quite amazing. I think it is significant, as you have suggested. I think it says a lot about Atlanta. I think it also, however, must remind us that we've got a lot to do, and we have the okay to go ahead and do it. And I certainly feel that that you're going to make a great mayor. And I want you to know, and everyone to know, of course, that I intend to cooperate with you fully.
Well, I appreciate that, and you know, it's a two-way street, and I think the nation will be looking at Atlanta.
Very carefully.
Yes, I think so. I think
sometimes I wonder if not maybe too carefully, because there'll be persons expecting us to make mistakes, and of course we will.
And it goes beyond the nation even. I received letters because of the widespread coverage given this election by the media, of the results of the election. I received letters from all over, from Korea and Israel, in Germany, in Paris, in Canada, in London, people who don't know me personally, or you, and many of them mention you in the letter, but, I mean, the results of the election were exciting to the free world, and I was pleased that Voice of America took a tape on this from me to use around the world to show democracy in action, and from the Deep South, of all places. Of course, we think of Atlanta as being unique in its mode of operation, but I think of it as being a pace setter. I think that time and again we have, marked the path for others to follow. And I'm proud of this. And Atlanta has a good history and a good foundation. Neither one of us ran on any platform of trying to turn Atlanta upside down or finding a whole lot of fault with the past, although we both recognize many shortcomings and that there's, much we can do ahead. But I think I speak for both of us and when I mention the confidence we have in the people of Atlanta to come
Absolutely.
Together,
Absolutely.
They'll be with us, the friends as along with those who voted for our opponents. I really believe that the vast majority of people will be behind us in our efforts. I was interested in your comment about when you were being placed in your first assignment and said it had to be Atlanta, because I had a similar experience when I came out of college and was offered a job as executive director for my national fraternity, which at that time was very exciting to me. It happens that the able-bodied men were all in the Army in World War II, so that was the reason they got down to me. I was right young at the time for such a responsibility, but it was a salary that was much more than I could have otherwise have expected. And I said, give me a day to think about it. And I called them the next day, and I said, I'll take the job if you'll move the headquarters from Philadelphia to Atlanta. Well, they didn't want me that much, but I wanted Atlanta that much. I had that much confidence then, and that goes back to 30 years or 25 years, and I, have even more faith and confidence now.
Sam, I share your confidence in the city. I came back here not because I had to, but because I wanted to, and I intend to stay. And I want to ask you a question. It's my feeling that there are many cities in this country that have problems that are not insoluble, but in fact have passed a point that that their ease of solution would compare with relative ease of solution in Atlanta. We're not talking about anything being easy, but in fact, comparatively speaking. Do you feel that Atlanta, for example, has the chance to again be the pace setter, to solve some problems in ways and maybe to degrees that major northern urban areas might not be able to? Do you understand what I'm asking?
Yes, I think we will. I wouldn't want to write them off and say they couldn't, but they may have to first let us prove that it can be done.
Right.
See, I see us going into the second stage. I think that we took a giant step 8 years ago. And I'm not saying just because I was elected then to the position of vice mayor, but it's just about that time in history, 8 to 10 years ago, that we really started moving forward in the field of human rights. And I think we're going to take that a big step now, as big as that step was then. And there'll be some people that'll find fault with us, but they won't, as the years go by, when they have an opportunity to reflect. 4 years from now, they'll look back, in my opinion, and say, well, yes, they were right. See, just like today, I'm convinced that the most conservative white man in Atlanta or any other city would be the first one to laugh if you were to suggest, if one were to suggest that a black man must sit on the back of a bus. Yet 8 or 9 years ago, they didn't laugh at all. So it was a very dramatic, very traumatic experience for them.
You have been listening to Analog, a radio series we present in cooperation with the National Conference of Christians and Jews. Our guests today were Sam Massell, mayor of Atlanta, Georgia, and Maynard Jackson, vice mayor. On each of these analog broadcasts, we have asked the participants to share something with us that has guided them and might be considered food for thought. Today, Maynard Jackson said, I think Atlanta's in for an exciting 4 years, and I feel one of our major efforts is going to be bringing people together. And Sam Massell told us, we are a national city, and I think we should admit the value to us of learning from other cities, and they have benefited from our experiences as we have benefited from theirs. This is the way the urban centers of the country must work, particularly now. Fred Facey speaking. This recorded program produced by Rhoda Grady.